Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 277. And after kind of stalking this guy for about 3 or 4 months, I finally got him set down here. But he was really busy because he was winning a state championship this year. And I'm really excited to have Coach Ryan Molnarek, the head boys basketball coach at Fremont Bergen High School here in Nebraska. Longtime coach, great team this past year, really solid program. Really excited to have Coach chat about all of this stuff here over the next hour or so. So before we get to him, though, we have to talk about our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or any of your athletes are struggling with balance, neck, or spinal issues, have them go see Cosac Chiropractic. Check out their practice at CosacChiro.com. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you are listening, go, whether it's iTunes, Spotify, whatever the medium may be, first of all, subscribe. Second of all, download, rate, review, give us 5 stars, say nice things about a pen and a napkin so we move up in the rankings. And when people look up basketball coaching podcasts, we start creeping up our way to the top there. So questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me a pen and a napkin at gmail.com. Enough of that stuff. Let's get to the main course here. Ryan Molnarek, head boys basketball coach, Fremont Bergen High School. Coach, how you doing this fine Wednesday evening?
Well, really good. I appreciate you having me on episode number 277. Wow, that's really far down the line, but glad to make it. I have been busy, Marty. You went right from high school basketball to junior high track. So trying to grind this season out and finish the rest of the year.
Which one's more intense?
Well, I know which one might be more work. We got like 56 junior high kids out and 3 coaches. So
God bless
you. Outnumbered.
Yeah, God bless you. I know you teach at a Catholic school, so I could say that. God bless you. So, our kids are all graduated out of high school, and they did a lot of stuff in the junior high days especially. And I loved watching them play soccer. Our one son played basketball. Our daughter played volleyball. They were active in a lot of different things. And I enjoyed watching them do all of their stuff, except for those long Saturdays at those track and field meets. Those were a marathon for me. But that's just me. But maybe that's just my adult ADD in there as well, Coach. So
yeah, they can be now. They're not on weekends anymore. Ours are all on the weekdays, so I'm out of school, and that makes it twice as tough coming back to, the next day when you haven't been in school. But no, it's kind of what we do at Bergen. I mean, we're a smaller school, and us coaches coach.
Yep.
There's not many coaches here that just coach one sport. I'm assistant football and head boys basketball and right on the junior high track. And then how summer basketball goes. So
yep.
This year round, but that's what we do here at a small school.
You bet. Well, let's talk a little bit about you, Coach. Let's get this going the way we usually get it going here. Tell us a little bit about your background, your basketball journey. You've had a couple of stops along the way. So just tell us about that. Maybe some important people that helped you out along the way, and the floor is yours, my friend.
Okay. Yeah. I'm a Bergen grad, graduated in 1991. Didn't make it very far for college. I went to Midland Lutheran College at the time, now the university. Played football there for 4 years with Coach Steve Schneider, like one year, I believe, with Don Watchhorn, but I had the opportunity to play college athletics. And as I said, I love Fremont. I've been in this community for a long time. Had an opportunity while I was in college to do some assistant basketball here back at my alma mater here at Bergen. I was a junior high coach. And then I believe my junior and senior year was a freshman coach here and worked with Tom Hoopstein, who was the head coach at the time. But, when I finally got hired, my first job was at Fremont High School. So I went from Bergen to Midland to Fremont. So I've had a pretty well-rounded experience in this community here. But a great opportunity for me. I was an assistant basketball coach with Joel Parks for 5 years. Really learned a lot. The thing I remember with Joel is just he was so good at the execution piece, the X's and the O's and So you said the floor is mine. I can tell a story here, right?
You bet.
You bet. It's a limited, but yeah I just, I remember, you know, with Joel, just, you know, my first real, you know, high school basketball coaching job. Like I said, I volunteered and did some here at Bergen, but I remember walking into the gym and Joel had the last period off, and he would be in the gym before practice with the kids, and he was dialed in, just right at half court. And he was, I could tell that he was thinking X's and O's in his head while he was there on the middle of the floor. And then he'd move himself down, you know, like right at the top of the circle, top of the arc, and he would start walking through things. And you know, for me to have an opportunity to coach, you know, with Joel, who had, you know, a ton of success and really survived a long time. I mean, he, you know, started as a coach and retired, you know, as a coach. It was an incredible experience for me. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, after Fremont, I had the opportunity to go to Blair, where I was an assistant coach with Mark Williams. And that too was, you know, those two guys were incredible mentors for me. In fact, you know, we still run some of the same stuff that Joel did. You know, everybody probably knows he runs Arizona. We call it something different because everybody, when we say Arizona, they would know what it is. But yeah, we would run that same stuff. You know, the guy coming off the quick ball reversal, the guy coming off the flex screen, and then you get the double stagger and the quick swing in the post entry and the, you know, double stagger on the other side. So, you know what Joel Parks ran 20 years ago when I first started this deal, you know, we still run a variety of it. We do a lot of counters out of it. But okay. So I get to Blair and I get an opportunity to work with Mark, and Mark runs a lot of the same stuff because Mark played for Joel and coached with Joel. And, you know, but when I was in Blair, it was, you know, Mark did such, he had that program really moving forward in the right direction. You know, it was really starting to explode. There was just so much enthusiasm in the community about basketball. And when Mark started there, he didn't have as much success, and they were on their way to really having a lot of success and getting to the point where they were going to have teams go to the state tournament. So, you know, when I worked with Mark, you know, the thing that I learned from him is he just was such a good people person and just really taught me a lot about building strong relationships with kids and in the community. I mean, he had that place loved him. You know, they did. He had a student section that was like the whole student body. I think if you went to Blair, the whole student section was there because just Mark just had built such an enthusiasm and a love for that basketball team at Blair. So, you know, I got 2 years to be, you know, an assistant with Mark, and he really taught me a lot about coaching and being an assistant coach and what head coaches needed to rely on their assistants for on the bench. You know, my first game with Mark, we played down in Schuyler, all right? And they had a really nice team. Schuyler had a nice team. Does Turner Troffels ring a bell to you?
Yeah, it does.
He's 6'7". I don't know where he is now, but played at South Dakota. Correct me if I'm wrong, but they had a nice team. I mean, a really nice team. And Jeff Droege was the coach there. And
yep. And
it was a very intense game, and it was coming down late. And Buck is a very intense guy on the sideline, turns around and looks at me and says, "How many timeouts do I have?" And I didn't know. I didn't know because, you know, I coached with Coach Parks for, you know, 4 or 5 years, and Coach Parks had everything. He did things his way.
Yeah.
Not that I didn't help, but he didn't need me to keep track of timeouts because he knew exactly how many he had. But, you know, Mark, not that he didn't know, but he really gave me the opportunity to coach and you know, share my thoughts and share my ideas, you know. But then after the second year I was there, the Fremont job came open, and Mark, you know, went back home. You know, he was a Fremont guy, and Joel retired, and Mark ended up taking the Fremont coaching job back home, which left me an opportunity to start my first head coaching position, which I was very fortunate because when Mark left, I mean, he built everything up to where it was. It was, yep. You know, handing the keys of a Cadillac off to me, you know. So in Blair, I had the opportunity to take my first coaching job. I spent 5 years there. I was very fortunate to have, you know, a good assistant, John Dolliver, who is now, you know, with NSAA. And so him and I worked together for 5 years. After 5 years in Blair, I lived in Omaha at the time. It was probably about a 35, 40 minute commute. And my wife she's a nurse in Omaha. And so we weren't going to move, you know. So yep. Omaha North came open and Larry Martin, who
yep.
was at Bergen. And Larry and I are friends, and he gave me a call and went and checked things out. And I thought this is probably, it was very difficult to leave Blair because that program was thriving at the time. You know, when Mark left it, I had the opportunity to really work with some very talented players in the youth program. They had a youth coach and Dave Warwick, who was a great leader. And there was just things were really, really moving in the right direction there. So it was very difficult for me to leave, but followed my heart and, you know, went to Omaha North. And Omaha North, I spent there for 6 years. Great experience for me, made me a better coach, a more well-rounded coach, mm-hmm. very challenging, but felt like we moved forward in the right direction in a lot of areas. But, you know, after my, you know, a little bit about Omaha North. Can I tell you, share a little bit about this story?
It is. The floor is yours, Ryan. We are all ears here.
Okay. Well, just tell me if I'm rambling on too much, but he told me to share my experience. So I'll do my best here. So, my first year at Omaha North, we ended up going to a district final, lost to Ralston. There were two twin Smith boys. Billy Herb was the head coach.
Oh, yeah.
There,
and, yep.
We had a chance, a sideline out of bounds play. We had a chance to, without any timeouts, no timeouts. I had a chance to get a sideline out of bounds play and never got a shot. So it was a pretty tough way to end the season, but we made it to a district final. The 2 years after that were very difficult. One of the challenges that I felt like I had right away was getting guys committed year round. Because you know, at that level, there were just a lot of kids that just played basketball, you know, mm-hmm. And so we needed those kids that just played basketball, to play more than just from November to February. And I always say November to February, cause we never made it to March. You know, we didn't commit ourselves enough. We didn't invest enough. Our players didn't invest enough to make it to March. And so, you know, for 2 years after that, we really worked hard on trying to build a culture and which kids were willing to invest time, because we wanted kids in the end, in the fourth quarter, to say, no, you know, I'm not willing to lose in the fourth quarter because of the time I've spent. And so we had, you know, we lost some kids that I think were talented that, you know, really weren't buying into the culture of being committed and investing the time they need in the off season. So it was a difficult 2 years after that, but it was my third year and we played, I believe, Papio South in the first round of the sub districts, and we lost, got buried, not even close. And I remember sitting in that locker room and just thinking, I don't know if this is working.
Yeah. Yeah. You have those moments of doubt. Yeah.
I don't know if we are moving in the right direction. But true story here. So the next day, and that was on a weekday. I don't remember if it was on a Tuesday or a Thursday, probably like on a Tuesday. But I went to school the next day and I was sitting in my classroom, and school there started pretty early. So it was about 7 o'clock, 7 a.m. I heard my door knock. And so I go to the door and it's Trayvon, Cal, and Dylan. And they said, "Vote." I said, "What do you need, fellows?" And they said, "When do we start workouts?" Mm-hmm. They said, "Today." Tell the guys, "We start today." And so going into my fourth year, we just had a group of kids that were tired of losing, and they were willing to commit and invest time in the off season. And And then,
and that's what it, and that's what it takes. That's what it takes.
You know, it does. And then that is a true story. That was the, those guys, I don't know, Marty, I don't know if I would have made it that fourth year, but Those guys, that next day after the sub-district loss, were at my door. So we're at my door, knocked on the door and said, "Coach, when do we start workouts?" I said, "Today, get the guys. We start today." And we worked. It wasn't 5 days a week. They worked. They worked in the spring. They worked in the fall. And we were better that fourth year. We were above 500. Those guys were committed. They did not want to lose in the fourth quarter. They were not willing to because of all that they invested. And then after, then we got lucky and we had Justin Patton. You know, we had Justin Patton when he was a freshman. And then Justin Patton, my sixth year, was a sophomore. And we went out to Omaha. We went out to North Platte and we played Omaha Bryan. Tell me how this works. Tell me that there has to be a flaw in the system there. That's been fixed, by the way, right? So we went out to North Platte and we played Omaha Bryan in a district final. Then we lost and they shot a lot of free throws and we didn't shoot many, but you've heard that sob story before.
Sure.
So, but you know, anyway, we were close. We were so close my sixth year. But at that time, my kids were getting older. I had a daughter that was going to be in third grade. I had another daughter in first, and then my son is, they're all about 2 years apart. And, you know, when you're coaching at that level and you're coaching at Omaha North, you know, you have to do some things to get kids. You have to be present, and you mm-hmm. have to spend some Saturdays in other gyms. And I was doing that, and I was missing my kids, you know. I was missing you know, their games. My wife was calling me and say, "Hey, Caitlin just made us three," you know, and I'm like, "Did you get that on video?" "Oh no, I forgot." So I didn't even see it. You know, I couldn't even see it on video.
Yeah.
So that weighed on me but gosh, my time, I wish I could have stayed. I really do. I really wish I could have stayed there at Omaha North, but my time was meant to, you know, be with my kids. So I went after 6 years at Omaha North. I had the opportunity to go to Omaha Bryan. I took Tim Cannon's job when he moved from Omaha Bryan to Millard North. I took his job as the dean of students there. Mm-hmm. And I worked for a great principal, and I was the dean of students for third year. And I still coached, Marty. I just coached third grade girls basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a little bit different. So I spent 3 years at Bryan and got out of high school coaching and coached my daughters and chased my kids and was around that for a while. And then I got a call from the principal here at Bergen and said, "Hey, what do you think about coming back home?" And you know, came into it, Bergen, my alma mater, and sat down with Mr. Koenig, and he shared his vision and shared with me, you know, things about the program and the teaching position. And you know, my family, my mom and dad are here from Fremont, or they still live in Fremont. So, you know, it just really felt right, you know, and then knowing that I could do what I love to do and what I'm passionate about doing. And at the same time, I would have my three kids in the building.
Yeah.
And so that's been very special to me. So I've been here at Bergen for the past 9 years. And, you know, that's my story.
That's it. Yeah. When do you recall, Coach, your first a pen and a napkin moment? When was the first time that you remember kind of writing stuff down on a piece of paper and kind of scratching out the X's and O's?
Yeah. You know, I think that when I really first realized, you know, the importance of the X and O's and being able to have counters and all of those things and being able to execute offensively was with Joel. You know, I mean, he really taught me a lot about that. And Joel was, he was definitely, you know, at a different level, you know. As I said before, I would walk in that gym and he would be out there and I'm like, where's he at? Is he with us here? But he was so dialed in and zoned in and walking through things and, you know, figuring out the X and O piece and the counters of everything. So, you know, Joel's kind of always intrigued me, you know, about that. And, you know, just watching the different things and adjustments that he would make on the offensive end of the floor was always, you know, something that I enjoyed watching with him. And you're never done growing, you know, in terms of the X's and O's. You know, this year, I met with Dale Wellman over at Wesleyan, and I connected with a coach from, you know, Ohio. And this is our first year. We put in some Princeton offense stuff, and we really like it. You know, we run a low post series and a point series, point away and point over the top, and all of our sets and everything just kind of flows into that. So, like, it's been so enjoyable for me this season because we've, you know, I'm learning something new. I'm learning the Princeton offense as a coach and teaching it to our players and getting them to buy into it and building and learning. And, you know, we'll continue to grow from what we learned this year and what we implement next year. But yeah, X's and O's has always intrigued me. I don't think it comes naturally for me. I think I've got to work at it. I think I've got to connect with people that know more than I do. And when you do that, that can really help you, as a coach.
Mm-hmm. How is it? You like you said, you played football in college. You're a math teacher. You still help out with the football team there at Bergen. You know, how do those, you know, how's your teaching job and, your football coaching position? I know how much the junior high track and field probably plays into it, coach, but how does that play into, you know, to your head coaching position, the extracurricular program that you're most responsible for?
Yeah. You know, I think being in the building, no, I don't know. Sometimes things are trending to having coaches that aren't even in the building sometimes. And we see that more than we've seen that in years past. And that's the way it is. Not that that's a horrible thing, but, you know, it's unfortunate to be a teacher, you know, in this building. I see these kids every day in the hall, mm-hmm. you know, I get to connect with them and see them every day. That was hard for me at North because sometimes I didn't see those kids every day, you know, and I needed to see them every day and connect with them every day. But here at Bergen, you know, I mean, I see them in the classroom, I see them in the hallway. They can't get away from me because I'm their football coach, you know, and I'm the junior high track coach, but I'm at the track where they're at, so I know if they're not working or not, you know.
Folks, we had a great day on April the 12th at the 5th Annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. And if you couldn't be there, that stinks. But what's fortunate for you is we taped everything that we did. So if you are interested in ordering any of our clinic videos or all of our clinic videos from our great presenters on April the 12th, it's there for you. All you have to do is DM me on Twitter at @apenandanapkin. Email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. We've got Andy King talking about 5-on-5 transition and controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer from Iowa State University on player development. We've got Lucas Dollinghouse on coaching through an administrator's eyes. Wade Coulter talking about pressure defense and extending your pressure defense. Raz Vanderloo with a basketball smorgasbord of stuff from Sioux City East High School, USA Basketball, and Jamie Smith from Solon High School, talking about shooting and shooting technique, shooting fundamentals. It's a great lineup, great coaches, great presentations. They're there for you. $10 a piece is all the videos cost. If you want to get all 6 of them, I'll bundle it together for you. $50 for all 6 videos. So coaches, if you weren't there, too bad, but because we're thinking ahead here, we've got the videos available for you. Give me a shout out. Let me know if you want to order any or all of the 5th Annual A Pen and a Napkin Spring Clinic Coaches Presentations. Coach, let's talk about your state tournament run here this past year. You know, obviously, one heck of a journey, and it's great to win a state championship. It's got to probably, I would imagine, feel even better to do it at your alma mater. But it was an interesting journey. You knew you were going to have a really, really young team, and we'll go into more depth with that, I'm sure, as we go through kind of this segment. 4 sophomore starters, and then a junior. And you're playing in one of the best conferences in our state for smaller schools, the Centennial Conference. Mm-hmm. You had 9 losses before you got to the state tournament, so what was that process going through? Like, obviously you felt like you had some talented kids. They were hanging pretty well against some really good teams, but I'm sure there were some nights where you're like, we should have won that game. Where when are we going to take that next step with this young crew? Was there any frustration, not bad frustration, but just like, you know, just that growth process that you have to go through with a younger group and them collecting their scars along the way, as they say. You know, take us through that journey before you got to the state tournament.
Sure. No, just like you said, we felt like we had some potential. Really, we did. At the beginning of the year, I felt like we could be a state tournament team, but man, we didn't have much experience coming back. You know, we had two starters coming back in Gavin and Trey. That might have been 10 points from the previous season. Mm-hmm. Gavin scored average 19 a game for us, but that was not really his role as a sophomore from the previous season. So yeah, we didn't have much experience. We had two other guys and Gavin Dean and Kale Sheets, that those were the only two that really had any substantial minutes from the previous season. So we knew, like you said, we were going to go through some growing pains just because of our lack of experience on the varsity basketball floor. Mm-hmm. You know, the other factor that we felt like, and I kind of shared this earlier, like we're a different team, but different strengths, different skill sets than we were from the previous year. We had, if you saw us last year, we had 6'7", 6'5", 6'3" off the bench. I mean, we just had a lot of, size, and we had to guard different ways than what we were able to do this year. So, what I'm saying, Marty, is we put in some new things offensively and defensively for our kids this year. Not everything was new. I mean, there were some things that were the same, but we put in a lot of new stuff. And when you have new kids on the floor with a new system, both mm-hmm. offensively and defense, as I said before, not everything. We didn't change everything, but we did change quite a bit. You're going to go through some growing pains. And so we tried to communicate that with the kids day one. Mm-hmm. Listen, stick with this Princeton stuff. It's going to come around. It was first just learning the action, and then learning how to play out of the action, learning how to read defenses and make the correct reads and get counters with it. And so, that just happens with time and with mm-hmm. the experience. I mean, it can look great in practice, but then when you put it on the floor and the lights go on, it doesn't look so good.
Yeah, exactly.
So we did. We went through that. You're describing exactly. We played Bancroft, and they had a great team. They made the semifinals of the state tournament. Mm-hmm. We played them second game of the year, and we were up 17 at half, and we lost that game,
Yeah.
We don't lose that game if we didn't have a shot clock, but we have a shot clock, which makes the game better.
Sure.
But we lost that game, and that was one of those things where – I think it's how do you approach the loss? You learn from it, you move on, you show them film, you show them exactly here are some reasons why what happened.
Yep.
Let's build off it. Let's move on. And that loss right there, Marty, I mean, as hard as that was, being up 17 and losing that, best thing for us.
Yeah.
Best thing for us. You don't realize it at the time. You want to spin it like that as the coach. You don't know if you believe it, but you spin it like that. But it was the best thing for us.
Been there, done that.
So we had to understand. We are young. It is a process. Let's evaluate each weekend. Let's find out some things we can do better. And let's see where we're at, when we get to our conference schedule. And that's what we did. We were 8-4 when we got to our conference schedule. And there were probably two of those games where we would have been like, yeah, should have had that one. But like we said, that those losses were better for us than winning that game by 2 points or mm-hmm. finding a way to pull it.
Yep. When you got down to the state tournament and, when you have a young team, sometimes those situations you know, and you always say this afterwards when you win, but when you're young, you kind of have this blissful ignorance, like, all right, let's just go out and play. You know, we don't have any pressure on us. We're just going to go out and let it rip. You know,
you're right.
You started out as an eight seed, and you beat the number one seed, Freeman. And then, like I said, you moved all your way through and ended up winning a state championship. But do you feel like as frustrating as it was during the season with that youth, when you got to the state tournament, that kind of that ignorance is bliss kind of helped out a little bit?
Yeah, I do. You're exactly right. We were too young to understand that we're an eight seed, and that an eight seed has not, you know, won a state tournament in 16 years, I think it was. We were definitely too young. You know, I think going through a conference schedule, I think that definitely toughened us up. Bottom line, we had to learn how to be tougher, you know, and there's a lot of factors that go into this with this group of kids. You know, they're sophomores, but I'm going to tell you, since those kids have been in the second grade, they played up. They played kids 2 years older than them. They played in platinum divisions. I'm telling you, makes a difference. I truly believe that made a difference for them down in the state tournament. Getting off on a little tangent here, Marty, but you know, I this group of kids, these juniors and these sophomores, I've been blessed as a coach to watch them go through their basketball experience, youth experience, to junior high to now high school experience, youth to junior high, with great youth basketball coaches. Mm-hmm. I mean, truly. Great, great youth basketball coaches. I've got to be a part of it with my son. My son's, you know, a sophomore now. He's in that group. But when we moved in here, he was in the second grade. And a guy by the name, you might know this name, Ryan Bojanski.
Oh, yep.
Yep. And then Fly played at Midland. He I think leads Midland in assists. He's told me that 100 times. He kind of took this group along, group of sophomores, and along with a group of these juniors, and they collaboratively worked together, and he did it the right way. Taught the kids fundamental skills from since they were second grade all the way up to, you know, when he released them to the end of their eighth grade season. Mm-hmm. And as I said before, I mean, these kids have been playing tough competition. You know, up to levels, platinum levels, and that stuff, you know, when you get to a state tournament down there, you know, which those kids have been going to state tournaments, watching kids, you know, they've been sitting there in the stands Thursday, Friday, and Saturday since they've been in the second grade. Yeah. That stuff really, really makes a difference.
Yep. Yeah. Now you spin this a different way. Now you go from the hunter to where you don't get a chance to sneak up on anybody next year, which is a great problem to have. Don't get me wrong. I'll take that over, hey, nobody gives a toot what you're doing. Have you thought about how you're going to handle your summer stuff with that quote-unquote expectation and looking ahead to next year? How much have you thought about that, Coach?
Yeah, I just, you know, I think there's pretty much everybody, and even our kids sometimes, you know, I think they think that we might have been a year away. Nobody was really expecting this year.
Sure.
To be honest. You know, not that these guys didn't believe that they could do it. You know, our message when we did get to the state tournament was, you know, your time's now.
Yep.
You never know what's going to happen next year. You seriously don't. Knee injury, whatever. You never know what's going to happen next year. So, you know, our time is now. That was the message that we sent to our kids. And so we did. We kind of snuck in there under the radar, and some things worked out our way that very easily could have went other ways. But you're right. It's going to be different next year. There will be a target on our back. How do I as a coach prepare our guys for that? You know, my goal is I want these kids to understand that they're not entitled at all to go there. I mean, there's There is not a spot in that state tournament next year for the team that won it the previous year. It's not, you know, they need to understand that that it's going to take work to get there. And they're going to have to be willing to put in the work. I love the fact that, you know, at the end of the state tournament, the interviews, Andy asked Gavin Baker, don't know if he baited it a minute or not, but ask Gavin Baker, are you going to win it next year? And Gavin Baker said, yeah, we're going to win it next year. Okay, Gavin.
Yeah.
Let's go.
He studied his best, Pat Riley.
Right. And sometimes when Gavin comes into the gym, I tell him, all right, Gavin, nice you're here, but who'd you bring with you? Where are the other, who are you bringing with you? You need to bring guys with you. So, you know, I think, you know, we got a nice summer set up. We have an opportunity to play in the top 10 camp down in Grand Island. We were invited to that. We're going to a couple other camps where there's going to be a high level of competition. Not that we're going to have all of our guys there. You know how the summer goes. Mm-hmm. You play in some of these camps and you don't really have anybody there or everybody there at the same time. But, you know, we're going to play in some high level team camps. And, you know, the message is for us is that you know, we're not entitled to be there. Don't think that it's just going to happen. You're going to have to be willing to work for it just like you did last year. And we're going to rely on some great senior leadership too. We got some juniors coming back that I think can provide some great leadership for our team.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Coach? Ryan, what are you looking at for yourself? What do you want to get better at, here during improvement season to better lead your guys, into the battles that are going to be upcoming?
Yeah, you know, I think you can always continue to become better shooters. I think, you know, when I look at, you know, the strides that we made in the off season last year, we had five kids shoot over 30% behind the arc. So the year before, we didn't have anybody. Mm-hmm. We did not have one kid shoot over 30%. So, last spring, when our sophomores were freshmen last spring, they would lift in the mornings. We have a strength training class for sophomores, juniors, and for seniors, those kids that want to take it. And our freshmen, we don't have an opportunity for them to take strength training. They do some of their PE class, but it's not true strength training class. Mm-hmm. So those kids would lift in the morning, and this was during the spring last year. I'd walk down there in the gym about 7:30 after they got done lifting, and it started out like they were shooting. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, all right, that's great. They're shooting around. And then a week later I'd go down there and pretty soon they're shooting like half court shots. And I'm like, oh, okay, well,
that's not as good.
They're in the gym at least, but yeah, they're not being very productive. And so then I was like, you know what? They're down there. Let's get something started here so we can grow shooting the basketball. And so we started a little partner shooting program that has worked well. It takes them about 15 minutes to do. There's just a clock up. They work with the partner. And they, you know, we figure they can probably get up anywhere from, you know, 50 to, you know, if they're really working at it, 50 to maybe 80 shots. And then plus they make 10 free throws, you know, when they're done with it. Doesn't take them a ton of time. But those we did that all spring. You know, the kids did that all fall. And we've got, you know, five kids. You got to round Gavin's up. He was 29.5. So we'll round that up. That takes us to five guys that are at 30%.
Yeah.
Just to see them grow in that area. But, you know, the other piece that I like with that, Marty, that we had some accountability with it as well, too. Yeah. I would assign them a partner at the beginning of the week. And they'd be assigned that partner for that week. And so if they showed up and their partner didn't show up, they weren't allowed to shoot. They'd have to go sit on the stage and watch. Or if vice versa, you know, if they their partner showed up and they didn't show up, then their partner would have to sit on the stage. So there was, we weren't really interested in having kids do it like 2 days a week or 1 day a week. We wanted guys that were willing to do it and committed to doing it 4 days a week. So, you know, in the spring, we had guys in there 4 days a week, getting 50 to 75, you know, shots up, you know, each morning. And, you know, it wasn't mandatory, but we had a good investment level and doing those things, I mean, really made improvements. And, you know, as I said before, that was a factor of us being able to get to where we accomplished what we did last year. Mm-hmm. So I think for this year, continue to grow in that area, being able to shoot the basketball and continue to have that investment with it. Those kids have already started this spring, and so it's great to see it, you know, that not drop off for us after the success that we had this season.
Mm-hmm. Youth sports today has become a billion-dollar industry nationwide, and grassroots basketball has been at the epicenter of this explosion. These days, players, parents, and handlers chase the almighty scholarship, NIL deals, and branding creation. However, there is still one place where basketball coaches and players come to develop their games without the fanfare and adulation of recruiting gurus, next-level evaluations, and social media highlight reels. It's not a basketball camp, it's a basketball school. Snow Valley Basketball School started as the brainchild of Herb Livesey, who, as a young adult, was inspired by the great Bob Cousy to start his own basketball camp. Starting in 1961 at Snow Valley Ski Resort, east of Los Angeles, before moving to Westmont College in Santa Barbara, Livesey's school was a place for the game's greatest coaches to teach the game throughout the 1970s and 80s. Two Iowans, Don Showalter and Jerry Slykus, adopted Livesey's curriculum, bringing the school to Wartburg College in Waverly, Iowa in 1994. This summer will be a celebration of its 30th anniversary of Snow Valley in the Hawkeye State. Here, over 1,400 campers will start each day before dawn and end after the sun goes down. Snow Valley Basketball School is America's longest continuously running basketball camp. It's where players come to learn and coaches come to teach. For those that come there every summer, it is the home to the Last of the Cowboys. The Last of the Cowboys, the story of Snow Valley Basketball School, will be available on Amazon on July 1st, 2025. Paperback copies will be available for $17.99, while Kindle copies will be available for pre-order for $9.99. Get to know the story of America's longest continuous basketball camp. Coach, let's talk a little John Wooden. How's that sound? All right. We are going to throw out our John Wooden quote of the day from Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations. Coach Molnarek, are you ready for a little Johnny Wooden? You already said you're ready, so I don't even need to say that again. Here we go, Coach. Page 177 of Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations. Here's the quote. I'll give you a second to kind of chew on it here. Tell me what you think. John Wooden quote of the day is, "Many people who tell you they worked all day weren't really working very hard at all, certainly not to the fullest extent of their abilities. Industriousness is the most conscientious, assiduous, and inspired type of work. A willingness to, an appetite for, hard work must be present for success. Without it, you have nothing to build on."
That's a long quote there. What happened to the short one?
Well, you know, when you have a Briarcliff education, you're able to do those type of things, James.
No, that's a good one. I the thing that comes to mind with me is, and we tell this to our kids a lot. There is nothing meaningful or lasting that comes without hard work. There's not. If you have something in your life and you didn't have to really work for it, it doesn't really mean a darn thing to you at all. That's one of our core pillars within our program is relentless work ethic. So when I hear that quote from John Wooden, that's what comes to mind for me. If you want to succeed in anything, You better be willing to work for it. You better be willing to pay a price. You better be willing to work harder than others for it. You know what? If sometimes if you don't achieve success and you work for it, well, so what?
Yeah.
You know, you can keep your head up and be like, you know what, darn it, I gave the best that I could give. And that's a wooden thing too.
You know,
give your best. That's all we can ever ask of you is give everything that you have, give your best, be able to walk away with your head up and then you can move on to the next scene.
Yeah. We would call that the man, or in my case, the woman in the mirror. You know, whether you're a coach, whether you're a player, whether you're a manager, you know, anybody involved with your program, if you gave it everything that you had, if you were locked in, if you felt like you prepared to the best of your ability and it wasn't enough, you know what? Then you got beat. And that happens. And that's okay. That's okay. But if it's anything less than that, then you lost. And there's a big difference in my mind, coach. There's a big difference between getting beat and losing. I think those are two completely different words. That's the way I look at it. I don't know about you.
I agree. And I'll throw this out at you too. And you probably have a couple of comments about this. With our kids today, with high school kids, sometimes it's just like, you see this a lot. Kids are afraid to put themselves out there just for the fear of failure.
Yeah.
You know, they're afraid to try things just because there's an opportunity to fail. I mean, do you see that? Did you see that in you as a coach and see that today?
You know, at times, I think one of the things that I started to see was more of like fear of failure. And God forbid somebody catches it on camera and they put it on a TikTok and now you look dumb or whatever, you know, that type of stuff. I think there's some of that. Or in some cases, I think some kids are afraid to put themselves out there, perhaps fail a little bit because they don't want to get critiqued by mom or dad after the game. And, you know, why'd you do that? Why'd you try that? You should have done this. You should have, you know, and it just adds more. I mean, and I think sometimes kids play tense because of that type of stuff.
Right.
In that vein, I did definitely see some of that type of thing.
Yeah. And so like you said, and I think that's something that we as coaches need to share with our kids. Failure is going to happen. I mean, it's going to happen. It's okay that it happens. That's the only way that you're going to grow. That's the only way that you're going to learn.
Yep.
That's the only way that you're going to be able to experience success is if you put yourself out there, and it's okay that you fail. And you got to learn how to have a strong spirit. You got to learn how to be able to get yourself back up and move forward. And like you said, I truly agree. Give your best. You know, bring your best, and you are the person. You can look in the mirror, and you are the only one that's going to be able to answer that. Did I give my best? And if you truly can say I gave everything that I have, hey man, you didn't fail at all.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't fail at all. So,
yep.
I think it's important kids understand that.
Yep. Coach, let's dive into some of your stuff here. Let's talk about what you do. With kind of, you know, in that player development type of area. Let's do this. If you were stuck on a desert island, and this is kind of the scenario I like throwing out there from time to time, you're stuck on a desert island. The basketball gods have said you can only do three development drills for your players, fundamental development drills. So one shooting drill, one passing drill, one ball handling drill, or, you know, concept, I guess we could call all three concepts. So if you had to pick one thing to develop shooters, what would be that one thing? Same thing with ball handlers, same thing with passers. All right. So let's go with shooting. What's your favorite shooting drill? If you were stuck on a desert island, you run one shooting drill for eternity. What would it be?
Okay. And if I'm stuck on that island with my team, right?
Like
a shooting drill for my team.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, something simple. I picked this up from Mitch Osborne years ago when I was in Blair. He was in Harlan.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time. We never played them, but got an opportunity to watch him play and connected with him. We just, I think he called it 10-minute shooting. We call it team threes. And it's pretty simple. We get 9 guys. We put them at the wing, top of the key in the wing. You could mix it up, put it at the corner, slot spot. But you have 3 spots. And we just use 3 basketballs, 1 basketball in each line. And it's pretty simple. You shoot and you rebound, pass right, and you rotate right. And we usually do that for 5 minutes. And we'll do it twice, a practice, at least twice a practice, every practice. But we put goals up there, at the beginning of the year, we'll do this drill and we'll tell the kids, we'll say, all right, you have 1 minute and let's get as many shots as we can. We tell them to make as many as they can. And so we say, you got to sprint after that rebound, long rebound, sprint after it. You got to deliver a good pass, make sure that it doesn't cross pass with another ball and hit the ball. And because if it hits the ball, then you got balls flying everywhere and you're not going to be able to get a lot of shots. The goal is, let's see how many shots we can get up. And so in 1 minute, I don't know, we may get like 20 shots up. And then we say, all right, well, and it would be more than that, but let's just say it was 20 shots. And then we say, all right, in 5 minutes, we should be able to get 100 shots up. And so we're right now starting out this drill, and we'll say that we're going to make 40% of those. So you guys have to make 40 of these in 5 minutes. It's an unchallenged shot. It's not, you don't have a hand in the face. I mean, it should be easy. You've got to make 40 threes in 5 minutes. And if you don't, you run. Or some consequence.
Yeah.
There's always
a repercussion, is what my old assistant Jeff Ritz would say.
Always a goal. Always, always, always in every drill. Where they as a team, and I love this drill because they're held accountable. It's together. It's a team thing, So you ain't trying to make a three and beat some other guy. I mean, you're trying to make a three for your team, and that's it. Now, we could make, this year, we could make 100 threes, and that was our goal. When we really got in the rhythm, and it was, towards the postseason, and we would do this, our goal was 100 makes in 5 minutes. And so we had kids flying around and work, and then they were working, and we tried to make a rule of, you try to get there in one bounce. That ball should not bounce more than one time, That would be my favorite drill. Doing that twice a day, I just think it really helps, building that team togetherness. We are all working for one common goal. There's pressure on the line. Nobody likes to run.
Yep.
We don't spend a ton of time running, but it's, hey, you got 22, yep. back up in 22 seconds. Hey, somebody doesn't get it. Shoot, we got to run again. So-and-so didn't get it. We said 22 seconds. You didn't get it. Let's run again, everybody.
Yeah.
So those type of things. And, ever since I've done that drill, since I was in Blair and since I got it from Mitch, we used to do it for 10 minutes. And, maybe I should do it for 10 minutes. You could do it for 10 minutes, but what we do is we do it for 5, get to something else, come back to it and do it for another 5.
Yep. Yep.
And the reason we kind of did that is just because, I don't know. I think when, the kids can't get the goal and they come back and they get another opportunity to do it, I think there's just, they're driven.
Yep.
They're more connected. They're more focused on doing it for the team, so that would be my number one.
Yep.
I would be winging one drill.
How about your favorite ball handling drill?
My favorite ball handling drill. I think I like a lot of one-on-one stuff, being able to pound the ball and handle the ball body on body. I think the game is so physical now. I think that we take time every day to work on finishing moves, to work on live finishes. with a body on body. And we do some of that. Most of the ball handling, you know, the 1-on-0, the 2-ball handling, you know, we'll do a lot of that in the summer. They do a lot of that at their D-League stuff. Mm-hmm. And we do a little bit during the season, but man, the ball handling that I like is your 1-on-1 live full court. Especially your, you know, 1-on-1, you know, guy has his back turned, you have your ball on his back, you rip through, take off, and you got an advantage, but he's coming from behind, trying to get a body on you, trying to make you finish. Those would be my themes. I can't do enough of the 1-on-1 finishing stuff, whether it's on the block, whether it's at the top of the key, whether that's, you know, the guy closing at you and driving at him. I love that stuff. I think, you know, I think the game is so physical now, Marty, that, you know, that you got to have your kids be able to finish with the body on them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, how about passing drill? So we got the shooting drill. We got the we got the ball handling stuff. Now passing. Let's finish off the triple threat here.
Yeah, I think, and I got my team there, so I got a lot of guys. One thing, and this could be a defensive drill as well too, but it I think it really helps us with our passing and being able to make the extra pass. We play a lot of 4-on-3+1 right in the half court. We do it every day. Some days we only do it for 3 minutes, like seriously, just 3 minutes. Some days we spend, you know, 5-10 minutes on it. Early in the season we do, but we will put 4 guys on the perimeter, 2 slot spots in the corner. We'll put 3 defensive guys. We'll put 2 on the block, 1 on each block, 1 at the free throw line. And we'll put 1 guy who's kind of in a dead spot near the basket. He's just a guy. He's going to be the extra, the +1 guy. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'll stand there in the middle and I'll bounce the ball and they'll slap the floor, do that thing. And I toss it out and those guys got to play 4 against 3. So you got 3 defensive guys trying to guard 4 offensive guys. And so those offensive guys, they're looking to move the ball fast. You know, they're looking, there's no driving. They're just passing. So they're looking to skip. They're looking to ball fake and move it. They're looking to ball fake and boom it. We call boom a boomerang. This is where they ball fake it one way and they give it right back to where they got it from, but they are looking to make the extra pass. They got 4 guys, you know, if they move the basketball fast and they're willing to share it and they ball fake it and they move the defense with the ball fake. I mean, they should get wide open shots. And it just, I love that drill. Cause I see kids at the beginning of the year that really struggle with skip passes, really struggle with making extra passes, really struggle with making quick decisions when the defense is running out to them. You know, I see them really get better in that area. But the way the drill goes is those 4 are, you know, going against those 3, trying to move it, trying to make the extra pass. When they get an open shot, when they get a rhythm shot that's on balance and in rhythm, and in range, and a 3 better be in range for all of our guys. At least we practice that. We let them shoot it. Yeah. And when they shoot it, you've got somebody on the ball probably challenging the shot. And you got 2 other guys that should be closest to a man to be able to hit and check off. And then you got that 1 guy that's under the basket. He's the +1 that needs to find the other guy. And so if defense rebounds it, possession over, and then they switch. Mm-hmm. And so defense becomes offense and offense becomes defense. And it's just such a drill. I mean, you talk about passing drill. It is a great passing drill, but overall, you know, we do a lot of it for defense as well too. But again, we play that game to 3. Sometimes, like I said, if we go for 2 minutes, we'll play that game to 2. And if they make 2 shots, if they get an offensive rebound, they can kick it out and start working it again. But if they make a shot and get to 2, then they win and the loser runs. Always a consequence, you know, so don't lose. that's what we tell our guys, you know.
There's truth to it. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't. And we tell them, you know, encourage your teammates. You know, we don't let them talk crap or, you know, that type of stuff. Just encourage your teammates and, You know, yeah, you don't like to run. I mean, we don't. Sometimes it's an up back in 11, up back in 22. It's short, quick. But yeah, we want our guys to learn to compete in every drill and not want to lose in any drill. So that would be my passing drill, which is a combination of rebounding and defensive and everything there.
Yep. Coaches are absolutely loving our taking over a new program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Want to know more about A Pen and a Napkin and all the resources it offers? Go to apenandanapkin.com, a great resource for any coach at any level. In addition to our A Pen and a Napkin University video library options that are available to order, we have hundreds of pages of notes, from one-page handouts to book breakdowns to original coaching notes. We also have coaching links, a full catalog of every A Pen and a Napkin podcast, and ways to contribute to the growth of A Pen and a Napkin. apenandanapkin.com is a coaching resource that will help you become a better coach. Let's talk about your overall practice, Ryan. Let's kind of chop that up here a little bit. Let's say it's second week of January, so you're into the season, but it's not towards the end of the season yet. You still got some stuff that you're probably looking to implement in some way, shape, or form. So take us through a typical. It's Tuesday, but you're not playing till Friday type of practice that you're going to have there at Fremont Bergen, Coach.
Right. These kids get out of school at 3:30 here, and we start practice at 3:45, and so. That first 15 minutes might look different every day because that's their time. I don't mess with their time. I don't ask them to come in the first 15 minutes and form shoot or anything like that. I let them do what they want. So you might see them get a 2-on-2 game going. You might see them playing knockout. You might see them shooting a half-court shot. You might see them throwing the ball off the wall and trying to do one of those trick shots.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You might come walking in there, Marty, the first 15 minutes and go, what is going on here? But no, I think that's an opportunity for those kids to wind down from their day, to be together, to talk about what happened, just to it's their time.
Yeah.
Then after that first 15 minutes, we do what we call a daily fun to start our practice. At the beginning of the year, we'll have, our seniors. In this case, this year we didn't have any seniors, but we had four juniors, and those juniors were our captains for our daily fun. Now, a couple of years ago, Logan Egan, a player I had last year, said, "Coach, we can't call it daily fun. That doesn't sound right. So let's call it sharpen the saw." So we call it our sharpen the saw for the day, but we have our captains get their teams together at the beginning of the year. They draft teams, and we'll start with like a trivia. Mm-hmm. We'll start with a NBA basketball trivia, college logo trivia, or something. Or we had a lot of kids on this team that had sisters, so one day we did a Disney princess trivia.
We want
to start out doing something fun, and they love it. Yeah. They love it. It's probably their most enjoyable part of practice. So you ask what our practices looks like. That's probably the first 20 minutes right there. So after they get their free time and we get everybody in the gym and we do our daily fun or sharpen the saw activity, then we get into practice. We'll start out with getting them warmed up and Going through our run throughs, and then we've done a lot of backdoor stuff, this year. So we just do like a 2-on-0 backdoor series or a 2-on-0 ball screen series, or we run some of that Euro ball screen stuff. So we run a lot of those actions with those guards and forwards, working together. Then we'll get in the transition. We really want to be a transition team. Our offense starts with the rebound. So we'll work 5-on-0 transition stuff, off a miss and off a make. And we want to have our transition flow into our offense. We don't really call it a secondary, but our stuff just flows, whether it's we flow into a point series action, our Princeton stuff, or we flow into, our zone offense, or we don't ever want to pull the ball back and set up stuff. We want to get right into it. So we practice that a lot. So we'll get into some transition stuff. We do some decision making, which is your 2v, your 2-on-1s, your 3-on-2s, can be half court, can be in the full court. Then we'll get into some one-on-one finishes, some finishing moves. This is probably where we work in our shooting. Like I said, we'll do some partner shooting and we'll do that stuff. We'll do some shooting on the move. We'll do some post-entry shooting. But every day, we're going to do that team threes, what I explained earlier, Marty, for 5 minutes. And then we get into our defensive stuff and our shell and positioning. How we want to defend screens. We work a lot on our ball screen coverage because we don't do the same thing, with every ball screen. Some games we mix it up just kind of depending on personnel, but we do multiple things. We play down and cover. A lot of people say it's ice. We'll switch things, even though if we get a little switched on a big, we just try to teach them how to full front and we give as much help as we can. We'll do that. Don't do much drop coverage on a ball screen, but, we'll practice it. We'll have it in there. We do some, other stuff, which we call, we call it squeeze, where we just stay tight and we just really guard and hug that, hug the screener. But we do some defensive stuff and then we get into, we get into our 5-on-5. I saw something this year that might help some coaches out, and they've probably seen it already. You might've seen it. Like I saw it, I think, on Twitter, but, when we start doing all of our 5-on-5 stuff, we start doing what we call 3-ball turnovers. So whenever we go 5-on-5, if we have a white team against a gray team, we'll put 3 balls out for the white and we'll put 3 balls out for the green team. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of put them on the side. And this is if we're doing 5-on-5 live in the full court or we're doing 5-on-5 live in the half court, whether we're doing the drill for, an 8-minute clock, or if we have 15 minutes running clock, we just give them 3 balls and we say, hey, every time you turn the basketball over, then go take a ball away. Mm-hmm. We usually have a guy that turns it over, run over there and take it away. And then when they run out of 3 balls, then we just put them on the side and be like, all right, you're running, get your up backs in, let 8 and 30, and then we get right back to it. But, our live stuff, 5-on-5, again, there's goals. We make it as competitive as we can. There's a winner and loser. And the one thing that I really like that, I would like to share is that, 3 basketballs for each team and give them 3 turnovers. And when they turn it over the third time, darn it, shoot. No big, that's too bad. You get another ball after this. Just don't turn it over. We got to learn how to turn it over, fellas. It means something here in practice. It's going to mean something in the game. So overall, I think that's what our practice would look like.
Mm-hmm. Let's end on this, Coach. Let's talk about your half court defense. I know this year you play, like in the championship game, you had to play some 2-3 zone. You had a little bit of foul trouble, so you had to adjust some things. But, overall, what do you like to do on the defensive end in the half court? And what do you teach? How do you teach it? Yeah, just kind of go from there, Coach.
Yeah, no, we're no middle. We like to play a lot of man, and we're no middle. We want to force that thing down. We want to keep it in the outer thirds. And we've had to make some adjustments. As I said, last year we were 6'7", 6'5", and we had quite a bit of size. So we just kind of really tried to play a pack line defense. And this year we were able to kind of, you know, we're able to pressure the ball. We got guys that can really bother and put some pressure on the ball with and be able to keep it in front. So we want to teach our kids how to play man-to-man defense. What I mean with outer third is we want to keep it. You split the court into thirds. We want to keep that basketball in the outer third. So if we get it in the outer third, we know exactly where it's going. You know, it eliminates, you know, us having to decide, is he going to jab and drive middle? Is he going to jab and drive baseline? We're taking away the middle. Uh-huh. We know we're taking away the middle. That's our job. We're forcing that ball down to the baseline. So that's, that's where we want to push the ball on the ball. In the post, you know, in the man in the half court, we want a full front. Now we've got a guy that's, you know, 6'6", and Gavin averaged, I think, about 2.5 to 3 block shots per game. And we say he averaged 3, he changed a lot more than that. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't know how valuable those guys are until you really have one. And Gavin learned this year how to be able to challenge shots and how to be able to block shots and change shots. Now, he learned the hard way, because at the beginning of the year, he took himself out of a few games because of foul trouble, because of leaving his feet and timing being off and not being able to get it at the highest point and coming down on a shot fake. And all of a sudden he's got 3 fouls and has to sit for us.
Yeah.
Which did happen in the championship game, and we had to protect him a bit. But so to eliminate that, Marty, we just kind of said, you know what? Nobody's allowed to play behind. You know,
yeah.
You get over the top, you sit on the top leg on the top side, and we just making sure, let's let them throw it. Dare them to throw it over there. We're going to have help side. We're going to attack that. We switch on the backside just to make sure that we could have help side, because if they're going to throw the lob and you in there, say they're running just a screen away action, just a slot to corner screen, and you're lifting that guy, if he's not sitting there ready to attack the lob on the help, you're in trouble, you know? So we would switch a lot on that backside. Even a lot of our, you know, a lot of the things we'd switch, if we'd switch a ball screen and we'd get, you know, a small guard on the post player and he was posting them up, we said, hey, your job is not to look little and weak. Don't look little and small out there. You know, you are smaller.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah,
I mean,
but you got to find a way to make it work.
Yeah, you got to fight. You're 5'8", and you're guarding 6'4". So what? You know, don't look little and small. Just get around him. You got help on the backside. They're not going to throw it into him. Just don't get pinned on the bottom side. You got to fight and you got to get around. Yes, we switched that ball screen and they dive that guy down and you get pinned. Well, you're going to look like the littlest guy in the gym. And if you want to look like that, then okay. You know, our man defensive principles is we're keeping it out of that middle. We just want to eliminate, you know, the indecision. We want everybody to know exactly where we're pushing the ball, where the help needs to be. We want to full front the post. We'll switch a lot of the screens, not everything, but we will switch a lot of screens just because, you know, this is the first year a lot of our kids look the same.
Yeah.
You know, Gavin's 6'6", but believe it or not, he's fine guarding a guard.
Yep.
You know, he can guard a guard. He might be able to get, he might get behind or on the side, but he's just really good at his timing and really good at, you know, being able to challenge shots, you know. So we have that luxury of being able to switch out on a lot of things defensively. Mm-hmm. When we're playing man, mm-hmm. we're willing to, in the half court, you asked, we're willing to play zone. You said the championship game, we played a 2-3 zone. I'll be honest with you, we didn't play that all year. We never played that. We truly, we practiced it. And you know, we did a little bit with it in practice because we, you know, we see teams that play 2-3, but our thing that we went to was a 3-2 zone. We had Gavin and Trent on the bottoms, and they were able to get to the corners quick. It was a little unconventional 3-2 zone that I don't think, you know, a lot of teams have seen. Our wings really make it difficult. We try to get our wings to not let the ball go to the outside. We do not want them to just be able to move the ball fast from guard to guard down to the corner. A lot of teams step in this two-guard front. They put two guys in the corner, and they have two guys up at the top. We don't want them to ping-pong that ball around from corner to corner. So our wings are really able to get into passing lanes, and we tell our guys not to get beat on the outside. Trey is so smart. He's so smart at the top of the key that he's able to kind of sink, you know, and keep the ball from going into the high post in that 3-2 zone. But he's also able to kind of extend out. That's one pass from guard to guard. We let them move that fast. We don't get our middle guy in that 3-2 zone. We don't get him in the passing lane, if that makes sense, Marty.
Yep, it does.
Yep. And then when that ball goes into the high post, we assign one guy, you know, the one guy on that bottom, either Gavin or Trent. We assign one guy, no matter where in the high post that goes, you rush it. You rush it fast and get up there and scare him so he can't turn and square and feel like he's comfortable up there. And then we just make adjustments and guys match up. And so it's a little bit different, but we have a plan with the 3-2 zone, and we played that thing pretty well. If we can get through a game and things feel pretty comfortable in the man, we'll just play that all the time, you know. But if we feel like we need to mix things up or teams are getting in a rhythm, we're not afraid at all to go in that home defense, which is our 3-2. But funny how that worked in the state tournament. You know, Gavin got in foul trouble and you know, felt like we needed to drop into, you know, a zone to kind of protect him, and just felt like we needed to kind of speed the game up and get it a little more up tempo and get Trey kind of getting into the gut of the defense a bit more. So we felt like we just run a 2-2-1, you know, just keep Gavin back there and try to get those guys aggressive. And I'm not kidding you. We never ran that before all season, and somehow it worked out.
Hey, so necessity is the mother of invention sometimes.
Well, and you have smart kids. The kids are smart, and they can execute different things, and that's a credit to, you know, what they've been taught since they've been young. And you know, we'll see, you know, how things work out next year too.
Well, I hope
we definitely like to mix things up defensively.
Yeah.
You know, the beauty about playing that zone too is when you have, and as I said earlier, and you don't know how lucky you are to have a big guy that can challenge shots and block shots and change things at the rim until you really have one. You know, a lot of times we'll start out in like a diamond press, and we just put the guy on the ball up top and two guys. And Bill Hurd shared this with me years ago, and him and Thiekin were together. And I think it was when they had, it was long time ago when they first got to Gretna, and they ran some of this 3-2 zone. But they would put, we just put one guy on the ball and two guys up on the elbows and have those guys match up with guards. And we put an interceptor right in the middle of the floor, and we tell those three guards, hey, we don't know how it's going to look, but your job is to try to get three traps. And the third trap might be on the one chasing it down from behind as it gets in the front, gets across half court. You know, we tell that middle guy in the, you know, at half court, we tell him, hey, look to intercept. If you can get it, get it. If you can't, no big deal. Just get back to the elbow and show two, because that ball's going to be coming up fast. And you just get the ball stopped while other people are chasing it down. And the best part of it is we got Gavin Baker, who's just standing under the basket. And we tell him, don't go to the corner. If they go to the corner, let him shoot the corner three, you know, let him shoot the corner three full speed. But just stay under the basket and don't foul. And you just challenge everything that comes right at you. But if you play it right, you're not going to have that happen to him too much. But we just tell him, stay in the hole and stay there. And then we just flow right into that 3-2 zone. And that mix up seems to really bother people sometimes. And,
Well, hopefully this is, you had said before we started, I've never been on a podcast. I don't know if I've ever listened to a podcast. And Ryan, I hope this whole podcast thing worked out well for you tonight.
Yeah, I did enjoy it. It's easy to talk about the things that you're passionate about and that you've been doing for a while. So I feel very fortunate to have the opportunity and I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Well, we, just seasoned and experienced. That's the phrasing we use, Coach. So, if folks want to know more about your program or would want to reach out to you, how would they do that, Coach?
Yeah, I would have no problem with that. I could probably learn more from them than they'll learn from me, that's for sure. But I definitely do. I love talking basketball. They can reach out to me and they can email me at ryan.molnarek@bergenknights.org. Or just call the school and leave a message for me, and I'd be more than happy to get back with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's great stuff here. Great season. Terrific basketball coach here. Ryan Molnarek, head boys basketball coach, Fremont Bergen. Coach, if you could hold the line here just a minute, got to wrap up a couple of things. Again, we want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosette Chiropractic. We want, follow us on Twitter, @APennaNapkin. Try to put out daily stuff there. Download, rate, review, give us 5 stars, subscribe, all of that, especially subscribe. That's the biggest one. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me, apennaandanapkin@gmail.com. It has been a pleasure and a privilege to have on Coach Molnarek here tonight. Hope you folks have enjoyed it. I know I certainly have. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.